Hello, everyone. This is the roundup right here at geeksofdoom.com, where we give you a bit of music, a bit of movies, what's coming up on the podcast's social blend and the drill down, as well as some other stuff that's going on right here at geeksofdoom.com. My name is Greg Davies, also known as CGT2099, and I'm here with Mr. Andy Sarcini, otherwise known as...
Mr. Baby Man. How you doing there, Greg?
They're doing very well. Dillygaff to you all out there. Dillygaff to you, Andy Sarcini. And I'm very happy to announce that today is day five.
Day five. What does that refer to?
This is my fifth day of being a non-smoker.
Really? Wow. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you, sir.
I wish you continued best of luck, because it's like it's an ongoing thing. You can't just...
I got through the hardest part. The 3 days, the physical withdrawal symptoms were very, very rough, but manageable. Mm-hmm. So I talked about this on Social Blend, actually, and I think I'm crediting my current success thus far to a book I read called The Easy Way to Quit Smoking by Alan Carr. And essentially, when you break it down... it's a brainwashing manual. It deconditions you from your previous thinking on smoking, and then reconditions you with new psychological thinking. So it's a complete brainwashing experience, but a positive one, I think. I haven't gone out and joined any cults or murdered anybody or done anything stupid or claimed to hear things from aliens, so to encourage everyone to drink the Kool-Aid. None of that's happened, so far so good. But the coolest thing about this book, the most interesting thing about this book, Andy, is that while you read it, you have to keep smoking. You're not allowed to read it unless you're smoking at the time.
What?
You have to read the book while you're smoking.
So,
and the guy's like, just smoke as much as you want. Just puff away. Suck the hell out of that bag. Just get it all done with, you know. And then you get to the chapter where you're on your final smoke. And the guy's like, okay, here's your final smoke. Go ahead and light up. And you're like, all right. So you light up and you smoke away. And then you put it out and you're done.
Huh.
And that's it.
Interesting. Okay. Well, it's kind of a guide that you read while you're, it's like on the job training, like on the book quitting, I guess.
You're kind of getting drilled, to begin with. You know, you're kind of you're gearing up your mind and your body for the withdrawal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and essentially it takes on a lot of stuff, some of the philosophy from the AA philosophy as well. You know, admitting the fact that you're not just a smoker, you're a nicotine addict, and you're one drag away from buying a carton.
Aha.
You know, and once you kind of get that set in your brain with the brainwashing, you can use that to bolster you against problematic days in which you start thinking, God, I could have a smoke right now, and then you start realizing, well, no, I don't really need it.
All this talk about smoking is making me want to smoke, and I don't smoke.
But there is one good thing about smoking, and that is the Geeks of Doom Roundup is smoking. Not smoking tobacco,
yes,
just smoking because we are damn...
We're smoking with an apostrophe at the end.
That's right. We are absolutely that. And what is also smoking is, and looks incredibly exciting, mm-hmm. I must say, is the trailer that you've selected for this episode. And this is an actual... interesting planetary alignment we're experiencing here today,
yes.
Andy, because both the music and the movies...
An unplanned planetary
alignment. This was not planned before, and we're going with a particular theme just by sheer coincidence. This is the Tarantino edition of the Geeks of Doom Roundup,
uh-huh.
And your trailer is Tarantino from top to bottom.
Yes, it's the latest... film from Quentin Tarantino, due in theaters December 25th, and it's called Django Unchained, and it stars Jamie Foxx and Christoph Waltz and Leonardo DiCaprio, And it's about a bounty hunter who rescues a slave in order to help him track down some the murderous Brittle brothers. And without over-explaining the concept, I think it's probably best if we just listen to the clip, and the clip will probably say more than I need to about this. So without further ado, let's listen to the trailer for Django Unchained by Quentin Tarantino.
There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down.
Good cold evening, gentlemen. Amongst your inventory, I've been led to believe is a specimen I'm keen to acquire.
When I hear the trumpet sound...
What's your name?
I'm gonna rise right out of the ground.
Django. Then you're exactly the one I'm looking for.
Hey, stop talking to him.
Calm down. I'm simply a customer trying to conduct a transaction.
Last chance, fancy pants.
Oh, very well.
You know what a bounty hunter is?
You kill people, and they give you a reward.
Better they are, bigger the reward.
I need your help. I'm looking for the Brittle brothers. However, I don't know what they look like, but you do. Don't you?
They caught my wife, and they sold her, but I don't know who to.
That means we visit every plantation until we find them. Once a final Brittle brother lies dead in the dust, I agree to give you your freedom. And I'll take you to rescue your wife.
Where are we going?
Yes!
Gentlemen, you had my curiosity, but now you have my attention.
How do you like the bounty hunting business?
Kill white folks and they pay you for it? What's not to like? I like the way you die, boy.
He is a rambunctious sword, ain't he?
What's your name?
Django.
The D is silent.
Wow, that looks fantastic. I mean, pretty much, we've come to expect nothing but, like, the best from Quentin Tarantino, and this looks like no exception. And what I'm really excited about this is, ever since, why am I drawing a blank on this? His last movie.
His last movie was Inglourious Basterds.
Yes. Ever since Inglourious Basterds, which pretty much introduced the rest of the film world to Christoph Waltz. I've been looking forward to seeing Quentin use Christoph Waltz again, and in fact, letting Christoph off the leash, as it were, and giving him like a full meaty, big meaty role, and he's pretty much the lead, you know, between him and Jamie Foxx, they're the leads in this movie. And so it's going to be exciting to see Christoph Waltz get a full movie all to himself with this film. I'm very excited about it.
Well, it's not really he himself. I mean, the whole focus is on, it's a revenge story.
Yeah.
Primarily, which focuses on the title character, Django. And so essentially what you've got another mashup approach that Tarantino's taking yet again, whereas like the last film was a sort of a spaghetti western set in World War II.
Yeah.
This is a more of a gangster revenge film set in the spaghetti western setting, which is an interesting selection this mm-hmm. time around. And can I say, Tarantino has not lost his flair for fantastic dialogue, just even by that trailer alone. That, you know, the whole DiCaprio delivery of gentlemen, you know, what does he say? Gentlemen, now you have my attention. Gentlemen, you had me curious, but now you have my attention.
Yes.
You know, that is just brilliance right there. And the way DiCaprio delivers it is, you know, he's really come into form as a wonderful actor.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very, very happy to say that I was proven wrong about DiCaprio. I was on that bandwagon many years ago of people that used to dislike him because he was such a teen idol to a lot of people around the Titanic era. But in the previous decade, he has really come into form as a really talented and diverse actor. And so I'm looking forward to see what he has to bring forward and deliver into this film as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait for this one. This is definitely one of the ones you need to go and see in a theater.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, I mean, I really can't think of any Tarantino movie that you couldn't describe as being a lot of fun. You know, an adult sort of fun, like can be enjoyed by adults, that kind of fun. And I mean, even when Tarantino's subject is, you know, violent and gory or action packed, or it's still done with a sense of fun, cinematic fun, and a joy for cinema. So yeah, really, really excited about that. So what's your shifting gears slightly here, and I guess keeping in the same tone, speaking of Tarantino, what's your music pick for this week?
Totally coincidental selection, nothing pre-planned, but this is totally Tarantino related. It is based upon the classic, memorable Pulp Fiction, created, written, and directed, and starring Quentin Tarantino.
The movie that put him on the map. Well, no, not really. Reservoir Dogs put him on the map.
This has been brought forward into a realm of... it's not really a mashup, but more of a electronic application or remix of the film itself into a song by an artist that we're big fans of, Andy, and that is Pogo from my hometown of Perth, Australia. an electronic artist who specializes, and we've featured numerous times on this program, specializes in creating music based on films and or television programs using predominantly the sound effects as the music, as the elements of the music. So, for example, one of my favorite tracks by Pogo was the Skynet Symphonic, where it was using the steps of a Terminator and the cracking of a bone for the beat of the song. The bass drum and the snare drum substitution. This is a similar process where he's used elements from some of the most familiar and well-known scenes from Pulp Fiction to create a wonderful tribute to not only the film, but to Tarantino and the actors who performed in the film as well. So this is his Pulp Fiction remix entitled Lead Breakfast, which I have to add is a fantastic title and could have easily substituted Pulp Fiction for the actual title of the film if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So here's Pogo with Lead Breakfast.
Hey, kid. This is a tasty burger. Burger. Burger.
Sounds like you actually have something to say.
Fuck me, that cutters straight down.
Don't
fuck me. Do you ask?
I'm the fuck fucking master.
Fuck me, that cutters.
milkshake. The end is what that. The day want that.
A bunch of fox food.
The end want that. The day want that. The end is
goddamn damn.
The day want that.
A bunch of fox food.
The end
goddamn damn.
The day want that.
This man needs to do a Star Wars remix, I'm telling you.
I'm surprised he hasn't, does.
I have a little bit of suspicion as to his motivations with the upcoming release of Django Unchained.
Interesting.
That the attention he'd be getting from Lead Breakfast might turn up on the desk of Quentin Tarantino at some stage.
Hmm.
Maybe, hopefully, that happens, and we might get a special Django Unchained mix, like he was allowed to do with some of the Pixar movies.
You know what's interesting about this is that, one of the hallmarks, one of the trademarks of Pogo's work is that everything that he uses in his mix comes from the movie that he's paying homage to, and I noticed that here he broke his rule on at least on a couple of different points. You could see it in the video. Part of the backing track that he's using comes from some, I don't know what movie it is, but it looks like it takes place in England in the 18th century, which is definitely not Pulp Fiction. And another part of it is I hear some. A little bit of synthesizer melody, which he usually doesn't take any melody at all from. All the melodies that he uses are usually from the movie itself and not ones that he generates. Like, if anything, it'll be just kind of the backing track of the percussion that he generates. So it looks like he's a slight departure from form from your typical Pogo mix. But you know what? It doesn't matter because it sounds great. I mean, the end result is a terrific mix and probably one of his best.
Yeah, I think the moment that you trap yourself into having to follow rules with creativity is the moment that you lose credibility and creativity. I think, with the whole object that I've always followed the philosophy of Gene Simmons when it comes to music and creativity, and that is nothing is sacred. Once you remove those boundaries, you can let the floodgates open and let the creativity flow. And I think that's most certainly true with what Pogo's doing. And I really think if he needs to break any of his rules that seem to be that are perceived by us listeners, then so be it. I think that's fantastic. That's the only way he's going to, you know, be able to flourish even further.
Yep, yep, I agree.
Now, while we're on the topic of music, can I jump into my Geeks of Doom story?
Absolutely.
Okay, this is totally up my alley, and I'm so glad that Obi-Dan wrote about this at geeksofdoom.com the other day. As everyone seems to know, because I blare it out all the time, I am one of the biggest Kiss fans you will ever meet. And in 1981, the band released a concept album called Music from the Elder. And the Elder, the idea was that, you know, Kiss thought they were being very clever, and they thought they were going to put out a wonderful concept album that had, like, Good versus Evil, all kinds of different overtones and the depth involved in the storyline. But it was a very vast departure from what their fans were used to, so much so that it became their poorest-selling album of all time when they put it out. It was the record company was even horrified by it when it was first previewed to them. And however, what's the most interesting thing about this particular release from Kiss is that it has grown on the fans and rock fans in general quite significantly over the last 30 years, to the point where it's now almost a cult release. It's got a cult following of its own. And a filmmaker by the name of Seb Hunter, who's been making noise about this idea for a little while, is going to be making and filming his own visual concept of what he thinks the Elder is in the form of a movie. And it's supposed to be a post-apocalyptic road movie, a genre that seems to be quite popular with some people. It's additionally going to be independently filmed. As a matter of fact, there's some links in the article by Obi-Dan where people can crowdfund the movie. So with indie films being so popular anyway, and that, you know, in a genre that seems to get a bit of attention in the indie world anyway, it looks to be quite an interesting proposal that Seb Hunter has put together. He's also a writer of a book called Hellbent for Leather, Confessions of a Heavy Metal Addict. So you know he's a music fan. You know he's going to be treating the subject matter with the utmost respect. And it looks like he's got a very solid vision for what he wants to do with the concept of the Elder. And I, for one, welcome this, and I hope that the band embraces this and lets him go ahead with it.
I'm all for I love that kind of stuff where there's a concept album, because the Elder, Songs from the Elder, is a concept album, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, where they've taken a concept album and translated it to film, because you've already got a great story basis there. Like prime example,
the story is about a chosen one who is found by a character called Morpheus to be brought into a different world where he has to find... Oh, wait, that's the Matrix.
Yeah, but, you know, it's funny you should mention that, because the Messiah is a very popular... The foretold Messiah is a very popular theme in a lot of these stories. Like, but what I was saying about the concept album, like, Pink Floyd, The Wall, is a prime example of that, where you've got this great concept album, and you've, or Tommy, The Who's Tommy, and you've translated it to film, and so I can only see where this could be a good thing to take one of Kiss's. So, what is The Elder really about, though?
Quite literally, what I told you. It's about a chosen one who was selected by a man called Morpheus to be brought into a different world and fight the forces of evil.
Wow, that really sounds like The Matrix.
That's exactly what it's about. And, you know, obviously, the Wachowski brothers that made The Matrix, they took a lot of influence from a wide range of sources. As a matter of fact, I did post an article at Geeks of Doom about how The Elder did actually influence The Matrix. I'm just digging up the article link right now.
I thought you were just joking.
With you in the chat, and I'll put this in the show notes as well. But you know, I threw in a wide variety of bits and pieces of evidence, mostly circumstantial, of course, to highlight how the Wachowski brothers were actually using some of the influences from the album in The Matrix. Obviously, with what Seb Hunter is doing, this is a completely different approach that this man is taking with The Elder. He's going with a very, by the looks of the posters, a very gritty, desaturated, grim-looking reality of some kind. You know, that, and so I don't think that we're going to see too many superheroes dressed up in kiss makeup flying through the air, or any ghostly twins like crawling through walls, or you know, Keanu Reeves doing kung fu. He's going with a particular feeling with this one, and I must say, it looks to be a particularly English feel by the look of the of the posters that are provided. It has a very you know, British feel to the design, and I think perhaps the cultural influence of not only, you know, the British background, but the British geography as well, might bring a completely different dimension to this concept that previously had never been considered before, and could be the winning combination that fans have been waiting for a long time.
I like how in that The Elder Matrix comparison article that you wrote on Geeks of Doom, that you find a way to connect Anthony Zerbe between the two.
Well, of course. He's the Phantom of the Park, damn it. Every KISS fan knows that. You know, that was an obvious thing that stood out
evil
to
leader
KISS fans
of
when the
Vampires
movie came out. He's Anthony Zerbe being selected to play in The Matrix? Are you joking?
No, of no.
That's KISS related.
He's the evil leader of the vampires from the Omega Man. Come on. Everybody knows that.
Well, you know what? KISS meets the Phantom of the Park. I'll tell you what. If we got in a phone conversation right now with Dave and Eve from Geeks of Doom in this phone call right now, and you asked those two where Anthony Zerbe is from, they would not say the Omega Man first. They would say KISS meets the Phantom of the Park.
Oh.
And I'd be willing to put money on it.
Right, but I mean, the Dave and Eve are also big heavy metal fans. So, I mean, I think that would probably, that would go without saying there. speaking of people who are not big heavy metal artists...
but it is music.
But it is absolutely music.
Totally music related.
Right. Totally music related, not necessarily heavy metal.
God, when it comes to segues, we are fucking awesome, I tell you.
The article on Geeks of Doom that I'd like to point out is one by Stoogipedia, where he talks about a new documentary about Paul Williams. Do you remember Paul Williams?
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't before your time, right?
No, he, well, a little bit, but he was also responsible for one of the songs that defined my generation that grew up following the decade of the 70s, the Rainbow Connection.
Yes, so we're talking about...
You know, not only did he influence many artists in the 70s, he was already targeting the kids that would become the kids of the 80s.
Yeah, so this is Paul Williams, and Paul Williams, for those of you who don't remember... or weren't alive to experience this man's genius, was a one-man hit song powerhouse. And he used to write a lot of songs for the Carpenters. He wrote all the songs in the Muppet movie, including the Rainbow Connection. He's written for a bunch of artists. Some people who remember these movies might remember him from the Smokey and the Bandit movies, where he played Little Enos, the sidekick to Pat McCormick's Big Enos and Little Enos, the two southern shysters who were always trying to get the bandit to participate in their schemes. He also had a minor hit cult classic in 1974 in Brian De Palma's Phantom of the Paradise, which was about a heavy metal star, or a hard rock star, I should say. And so after his success in the 70s, he pretty much dropped off the map, and one ardent filmmaker wondered if he was even still alive. And so he basically tracked him down and chased him all the way to where he's been playing, he's been playing moderately sized venues in, I think it was the Philippines. I guess he's big in the Philippines. So this filmmaker traced him down there and found out, yes, he is in fact still alive. And he had this terrible battle with alcohol abuse and drug abuse, and that pretty much made him drop off the map. But he's doing well. He's been recovered several decades now, and living a moderate successful lifestyle, touring mostly in places like the Philippines, where apparently he was a bigger hit there than he was here. So
this is interesting. Here I'm going through the Star Trek series at the moment. I'm on the finishing approach to the final season of Deep Space Nine, but I'm also watching Voyager. And apparently he made an appearance in an episode in 2000.
Did he really?
Of Star Trek Voyager. So I'm going to have to keep my eyes peeled for him when I get to season 6 of that series.
I'm going to have to check that out myself, because I am actually a big fan of Paul Williams, and I love his campy, syrupy, romantic ballads, and I'm not afraid to admit it. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing this movie myself, because I'm curious to see what has happened to him since he basically dropped off the map.
I think his most famous role was actually in the Muppet movie from 1979, where he played a character named El Sleazo Pianist.
Yes, he was the pianist in that movie, for sure.
Oh, dear.
So, there you go. Paul Williams still alive. It's actually out now, I believe, so you can check it out now if you're really interested.
And by the way, folks, we will have a link to the article by Sugipedia in the show notes. Mm-hmm. You can check it out there, where there'll be a link to the trailer, where you can have a listen to that. Actually, Andy, while we're recording, why don't you go ahead and hit play on that bad boy real quick. Give our listeners about 20 seconds of that trailer so that they can get a taste of what.
In the 1970s, before there was this guy or this guy or even this guy, there was
Paul Williams.
Paul Williams.
Paul Williams. Mr. Paul Williams.
When I was a kid, I really wanted to be Paul Williams. He wrote Evergreen for her, and Rainy Days and Mondays for them, and The Rainbow Connection for this guy.
When you write a song with a girl's name, do you ever tell the girl, say, I was thinking of you when I wrote this?
A lot of Holiday Inns, I've heard those lines.
And he was in movies like this, and One Stuff Like This. And I always thought he died too young. But last year, I found out something that amazed me. He's not dead.
I'll never forget today, ever.
All right. Well, we'll leave the rest of the trailer too. We'll actually embed the trailer in our link to the story in our show notes, so you can check out the trailer there. But yeah, man, I'm just really, it brings, like, you know what it is? It just brings back a wave of nostalgia over that era that I lived through, and remember this guy's heyday when he was, 5 foot something cock of the walk. So there you go. Paul Williams still alive. So what is going down on Social Blend?
Well, last week on Social Blend, we had our Music Edition, which was a special edition of the Music Edition, I might say. We looked at live recordings, live songs that were either had some special meaning for us or had an impact on us in some way. So it was Cranny Melody Alive. Corey Kaler, the musician, joined us for the show, and we played some live music from John Legend before he was John Legend. We played
when he was
John... metal cover by a band from Mexico that specialized in flamenco acoustic playing, Rodrigo y Gabriela. And we also played a bit of Bruce Dickinson, which our co-host Tara was very excited about as well. But this week on Social Blend, Andy, we have got a very special episode coming up. Are you familiar with the television series Millennium?
Oh, yeah. Chris Carter produced series with Lance Hendrickson as the lead.
Right, exactly. And it was filmed. It was basically created within the X-Files universe.
Sure.
So it was part of the X-Files universe. And we very recently, Lance Hendrickson was been making some noises about the possibility of making a Millennium film.
Yes.
It's been actually been something that fans have been pushing for many years, and I posted an article about this at Geeks of Doom recently, and I was the webmaster of a site called backtofrankblack.com, Frank Black being the name of Lance Hendrickson's character in Millennium, has reached out to us to talk about the fan campaign in pushing this as a possibility that, you know, Hendrickson could return to the Frank Black character and bring Millennium back as a film, perhaps a film series. And Troy Foreman from the website will be joining us this week, and we'll be talking all things Millennium, as well as what's going on with the plans for the possible upcoming film. And these guys actually have a podcast as well, all about Millennium. And so we'll be talking about that on this week's Social Blend. As well as that, this week on Social Blend, following the news, and I'm sure you're going to continue to cover this, Andy, the ongoing dramas between Funny Junk, or rather the lawyer representing them, and the Oatmeal, is ongoing. Doesn't seem to be stopping. Reddit, anyway, it's being brought up into levels of hysteria. I also want to talk about this curious story involving the bus monitor who received over $600,000 from donors on the internet for being bullied on a bus. You know, there's a whole kinds of stories about that circulating at the moment. The zombie apocalypse is ongoing, including a confirmed airflow leak in one of the CDC centers.
that sounds like the opening to The Stand, Stephen King's The Stand.
Yes, it does. It's a confirmed story today, actually, that came from Reddit. We open up that link. We'll be talking about that among the other zombie-related stories that have been popping up in the news since the zombie attack several weeks ago. And, of course, we'll have our regular segments, the What the Fuck Stories of the Week and the Countdown to the Guts Fuck of Humanity, which we have some really interesting stories for that one this week. So, yes, and here's the story. It's from, let's see here, airflow leak in the CDC's biogerm lab. So, yes,
wow.
It's zombie apocalypse. Going on as we speak.
I only hope that they have, like, multiple redundancy on those systems.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, usually this stuff is chalked up to, you know, media hysteria than anything else. So, you know, I'm sure everything is just fine.
Yeah, we got to have something to be hysterical about, that's for sure.
Oh, we have to. But, you know, well, you know what I'm hysterical about, Andy?
What's that?
Microsoft Surface. And I'm sure you had a bit to say about that on the recent drill down, and you're probably going to have more to say about it on this week's episode, right?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, as you may have surmised, the last episode of the drill down that we had last week We covered the surface from the surface to the interior. We didn't just scratch the surface in covering the surface.
Oh, I'm loving these puns.
We learned that the beauty of Microsoft's new portable tablet laptops went far beyond just the surface. It's so Microsoft unleashed two new tablets that are designed from the ground up to be optimized for their upcoming Windows 8 and the Metro interface. And these are beautiful tablets. I mean, let me tell you, we go into the detail about them. They're essentially the rivals to. They're not quite iPad killers. They're more like MacBook Air challengers. And we go into the details about those and the pros and cons and what to expect and what we know and what we don't know. Like the two crucial things that we don't know about this device is when it's coming out and how much it's going to cost.
That is true. But the other thing is that Microsoft have for years had a corner of the market that Apple never really had, and that was enterprise. And yes, they really could.
They could, except like
they
the early
really could step in the way of the iPad's advances on enterprise.
The early buzz with Windows 8 is that it's not really that enterprise doesn't seem to be taking a shine to it so far because of that Metro interface. They don't feel like it's
right, exactly. But that's on a desktop scenario. This whole thing with the Microsoft Surface, this is a game changer.
Yes,
for the concept of Windows 8. I'm talking from someone who works in tech and tech support. The whole news about Windows Surface or Microsoft Surface when it came out that the Surface tablet was coming, everybody in our area went, you know what? We should have seen this coming. This makes sense. This will make perfect sense in a enterprise environment to have a touchscreen tablet designed by Microsoft, specifically designed for Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
This is brilliant.
Yep. I can't agree with you more. I think it is a brilliant move on Microsoft. A lot of people are saying it is a watershed event, and we cover that in detail. Plus, we also cover the oatmeal versus funny junk war, Facebook buying face.com, an alarming rate of government censorship of internet content, according to Google's latest global report. And we also cover the Orville copter, which I don't know if you have heard about this, but it is a creation of a Dutch artist who turned his dead cat into a remote-controlled quadcopter. And
what?
Oh, you have not seen this? Okay, all right. I'm going to show you the link. You can take a look at it while we've got the show going here, and give me your opinion on that as we're
So it's a video, and oh my word, look at that! That is amazing.
Yes.
That is Andy, where do I get fucking one of these? I have to have a dead cat helicopter. This is incredible.
So the Dutch artist, his cat like got hit by a car. It was a beloved, much beloved pet, and so he decided to take it to a taxidermist, stuff it, and then turn it into a quadcopter, which flies around.
Andy, you need to put this up as a Geeks of Doom post, as a what the fuck video of the week or something. This is fantastic.
Well, it's in the drill down show notes post.
Oh,
sure.
Of course. Well, yes, you know, there you go.
All right, and coming up this coming week, we're going to be talking about the notable lack of pay or lack of competitive pay that the Apple stores pays their customers. Apple versus Motorola, the patent case that has been dismissed by the judge and why that's been dismissed. Amazon Studios steps up to the plate to face up against Netflix with four original TV projects. And we're going to talk about a leak involving Microsoft's next generation gaming console, which is in this leaked document being called Xbox 720. So we're going to talk about all that and more. As you know from past episodes, we don't know exactly what we're going to be talking about because we like to keep it right up to the very last minute as far as current news. So that is all we know so far that we're going to be
talking
about.
Well, the interesting thing about the tech world, Andy, is that there's always a lot of good news out there that's worth following. But as you well know, there's also a lot of there's a lot of boring crap out there that we have to put up with and try to read. So I'd like to send a shout-out real quick to Charles Correa, on the lawyer representing Funny Junk, for giving us something really fucking entertaining to read in the technology section of Reddit last week. That whole thing has just become an absolute joke. And, it was no doubt that both podcasts, Social Blend and The Drill Down, would be covering such a horrendous situation. But amusing to read nonetheless. It's like watching a train wreck.
Yeah, it's like I like to say, it's a grab your popcorn kind of moment.
Oh, absolutely. That's the best way I've ever heard it described, actually. If you want to know more about the whole Funny Junk versus Oatmeal thing, listen to The Drill Down, listen to Social Blend. We're going to get down in depth about the ridiculousness of it all. It's going to be a lot of fun. So check out the podcasts. And as for, make sure that we tell everyone where they can find us. Drill Down. Where can people catch The Drill Down, mate?
Drill Down is live Wednesday evenings, 7-ish on geeksofdoom.com. And then we release our MP3 version, our recorded version, the following Friday, also on Geeks of Doom. Of course, you can look us up on iTunes. Look for The Drill Down, and you can find our feed there as well. And what about Social Blend, mate?
Thursdays is when you can catch Social Blend. Social Blend, the newest episodes come out then at social-blend.com. You can also catch us at on iTunes. We've got a little subreddit going on, so people can follow us there if they want to see the latest updates. We're also on the Facebookeries. And the Twatters
other podcast projects that you're involved in?
Disquisition, of course, I want to mention as well. Mm-hmm. Disquisition is a podcast I do with Lee Garnett, otherwise known as Endcomment. You can catch that show at disquisitionshow.com, where we basically go on a bit of a rant and a ramble, and it's a really interesting exercise in putting up with us rambling.
Intellectual mind-chewing, I would say.
Pretty much. We had a really interesting discussion last week about where we think Occupy Wall Street is going.
I called Disquisition, the Disquisition podcast, chewing gum for your mind, really.
I think that's going to be the name of the next episode, Andy. That's fantastic. I'm going to have to run that by Lee.
So there you go. Don't forget to catch that every week, as well as our other podcasts. And, of course, everything, all the fine content on geeksofdoom.com.
And, of course, you can catch us here every week doing the roundup right here at geeksofdoom.com. But right now it's time for us to go and to say to you all,
Dilly Gaff.
Well, hello, everyone. We have more twats than twit here. No, that's a bad intro. Let's start again. We can clip that and use that as an outtake, I suppose.
All right.